We're in a series right now in February called Love Does. And February is the love month, but we're not talking about the mushy kind of love or the hearts and flowers kind of love, but there is a quick public service announcement. Valentine's Day is this week, in case you didn't hear or notice that Valentine's candy was at Walmart before Christmas was even over. But we're talking about the way love is supposed to be, and that the way that love is not just something you say, but it's also in your actions. And that's how people know that you love them. It's not just because you communicated to them, but because you showed them your love. On our door of our church, I just mentioned this before, it says, love God, love people, do something. I'd like you to say that with me. Love God, love people, do something. This, in a nutshell, is what Focus Church is about. In a nutshell, it is what we are about in being Jesus followers. That we need to love God, we need to love people, but saying we love God and saying we love people is not just enough. We've got to do something to show God love. We've got to do something to show people love. And so in this series, we are looking at the keys to making this happen, to take those actions to do something. Last week, we learned that love wants to. You see, love requires for us to go beyond our selfish nature. That's all about me, me, me. It makes me think about, I want to do something for you. Love wants to help. And today, we're going to be learning that love requires us to go against our nature in desiring recognition when we do something for someone else. You see, love involves doing capeless capers. I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles today to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. We're going to be reading out of the Message version. It's also known as MSG. So if you've got your phone with the YouVersion Bible app, you can go to the top, change the letters to MSG so you can follow along. The words will also be on the screen as we read it today. When you came in today, you should have received a bulletin, and inside the bulletin, there are some sermon notes that you can follow along with the message with some fill-in-the-blanks, and the answers will be on the screen as we continue along this morning. So we're reading out of Matthew chapter 6. We're reading verses 1 through 4 out of the Message version, and it says this: be especially careful when you are trying to be good, so that you don't make a performance out of it. It might be good theater, but the God who made you won't be applauding. When you do something for someone else, don't call attention to yourself. You've seen them in action, I'm sure. Play actors, I call them, treating prayer meeting and street corner alike as a stage, acting compassionate as long as somebody is watching, playing to the crowds. They get applause, true, but that's all they get. When you help somebody out, don't think about how it looks. Just do it, quietly and unobtrusively. That is the way your God, who conceived you in love, is working behind the scenes, how he helps you out. Let's pray. God, I pray that we are challenged to action today. That with your word, that it would not be something we just hear, but it's something we're challenged to do. I pray that you would be with us for the next few moments, that we would not leave here the same way as when we came in. Speak to both our hearts and to our minds. In Jesus' name we all said, amen, amen. Now I asked you a little bit ago to introduce each other and to ask who's your favorite superhero. And superheroes are all the rage. I mean, they're making all the money in movies, making superhero movie after superhero movie. And why do they do that? Because we like superheroes. I think we all secretly wish that we could be a superhero. And so we were asking, who's your favorite superhero? And let's take a poll here. If you like Superman, raise your hand. Okay, a few hands. If you like Batman, raise your hand. Yeah, Batman. Wonder Woman. You're there. How about the Flash? Ooh, there you go. Iron Man. Okay. The Hulk. Captain America. Oh, yeah, there you go. The list could go on and on and on. And one of the ways we are able to recognize who a superhero is by what they wear. They have a particular outfit. We notice them. And did you ever stop to realize that everyone who is a superhero kind of wants people to know what they're doing? They're not just hiding out and saying, oh, no one's noticing what I'm doing. I'm just doing good, taking care of the bad guys. No, everyone hears about it. Everybody knows that they were there. They're not inconspicuous. You know, it's been said, is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's Superman. It's our very own nature that if we get the courage to go beyond being selfish and say that I'm going to help somebody, I'm going to do something, we then fight the next level of our nature, which says, get recognized for it. Don't just do it and nobody find out, but let everybody know. Somehow advertise it. We feel good when we do something for somebody else, and we want that recognition for it. About 5 years ago, my wife and I heard something about someone in our church, their washing machine blew up. And they shared it on Facebook that their washing machine blew up. And when we saw this post on Facebook, we're like, oh, they're a family of six people. They can't last like 24 hours without having the washing machine. We kind of know from experience. We got to have a good, reliable washing machine. And when my wife and I, when we saw the post and we realized just how big of a need this was, we set it in our hearts that we were going to do something about it. Like, we're gonna do something to bless them, to take care of them. And so we decided that we were going to give them $500. Now, this is kind of strange for us because we don't have spare $500 just laying around. This was a big deal, and this was taking it from someplace else and saying, we're going to give this. And we began thinking about this kind of a shenanigan of how do we get them $500 and get it to them without them knowing who we are, and make sure they know it's for a washing machine, that they can get a washing machine, and they won't be overwhelmed by that. And so we began planning and figuring out, and how do we get the cash out, and how do we write it on the envelope, and how do we deliver it with them having no idea who it is or who they got for it. And so we snuck to their place, and we got the envelope, and we taped it to the door, and we knocked on the door. We ran away as fast as we could, and they didn't see us. We felt really good about ourselves. Like, we did something. God placed it on our heart to love on somebody else, to not be selfish. And we were saving money for something we wanted to do. And we said, hey, we're going to do something great. But then something else happened. Personally, for me, I felt like $1 million. But then I realized nobody knows I feel like $1 million right now. I kind of wish I had a cape on that says, I'm incredible. I looked and kind of hung around these people to hear if they would say anything about, wow, somebody, we don't know who they are, blessed us with money to buy a washing machine. And I never heard anything. I don't know what happened. I don't know if they got the money. I don't know if they got the washing machine. I don't know. And it drove me insane. And you can tell it's still not driving me insane right now, 5 years later, because I have no idea still. But what I've been wrestling with all this time has been my nature. It's your nature, it's my nature, that we like to be recognized when we do something that is amazing and incredible. We want people to know we were the hero. Speaking of incredible and of capes, let's take a look at this.
Figures with poofy lips who think only about themselves. I used to design for gods. But perhaps you come with a challenge, eh? I was surprised to get your call.
I just need a pass job.
This is mega mesh, outmolded, but very sturdy, and you've torn right through it. What have you been doing, Robert? Moonlighting hero work?
Must have happened a long time ago.
I see. This is a hobo suit, darling. Oh, you can't be seen in this. I won't allow it. 15 years ago, maybe, but now...
What do you mean? You designed it.
I never look back, darling. It distracts from the now. You need a new suit. That much is certain.
A new suit? Oh, where the heck am I going to get a new
suit?
You
can't! It's impossible! I'm far too busy, so ask me now before I again become sane.
Wait, you want to make me a suit? No,
you push too hard, darling, but I accept. It will be bold, dramatic,
yeah.
Heroic.
Yeah, something classic, like Dinah Guy. Oh, he had a great look. Oh, the cape and the boots.
No capes.
Isn't that my decision?
Do you remember Thunderhead? Tall, storm powers. Nice man, good with kids.
Listen.
November 15th of 58. All was well, another day saved, when his cape snagged on a missile pin.
Thunderhead was not the brightest bulb.
Stratogale, April 23rd, 57. Cape caught in a jet turbine.
You can't generalize about this.
Meltaman, express elevator, Dinah Guy, snag on takeoff, splashdown, sucked into a vortex. No kicks! Now, go on. Your new suit will be finished before your next assignment.
You know I'm retired from hero work.
As am I, Robert. Yet here we are.
No capes. No capes with the super suit. When Jesus was doing the good that he was doing on this planet, when he was helping people, the Bible describes that when somebody was before him and they needed healing, there was two things that took place each time. He would look at them, and the Bible described that he had compassion on them. He loved them. He would heal them, but then he would give them some very specific instructions. And if we were to read this, we would say, wow, this doesn't make sense. Why would he say this? Because Jesus would say at each occurrence, he would say, hey, don't tell anybody that I did this for you. Don't tell anyone. Now, did they listen? No. Now, this is a very interesting way to self-promote, you know, Jesus' ministry. I mean, if it was nowadays, you would think, would Jesus have a website address that would say, JesusTheHealingGuy.com, and you find stories and pictures of, here's who we've healed here, and here's who we've healed there, and I don't think that's what we would find, would it be? Because his self-promotion was all about, hey, I'm going to do something, but don't tell anybody I did it. I believe that Jesus was modeling something for us here. That when he was showing love to others by doing something, he was saying that we need to be secretly incredible. That we should conspire to do capeless capers. So I've been talking to my kids and testing this out on them. You know, that's the right of a pastor's kid, is that you get to be a guinea pig for whatever dad's going to preach about. And I've been sharing with them about, hey, what is a capeless caper? And for them, they're thinking, God, Dad, I've never heard of the word caper before. And I had to kind of come up with the explanation of what a caper was. And a caper is like a shenanigan. And they're like, a shenana what? I'm like, well, it's like you're being mischievous and conspiring to come up with an idea that's, hey, usually it's to do something bad, but it's kind of like a secret mission. They're like, okay, so what you're saying, Dad, is that you want us to go on a secret mission to go show love to somebody, but you want us to be capeless. Like, what do you mean by that? I said, with capeless, that you're not a superhero in doing this, that nobody really knows that you did it, but you're helping somebody else out. In Jesus' time, there were 6 people who were unknown heroes, who showed tangible love without a cape. And we're going to look at these guys here this morning to look at this trend, this idea of doing something for somebody else without the cape. Going on these capers to accomplish something, to show someone love. And the first one, group that we're going to look at is actually 4 guys. 4 guys in the Bible. You find a story in Luke. And they had a friend, these 4 guys. A friend who was a paraplegic, but he was their friend. And they heard that there was a dude named Jesus, and they believed that if we can get our friend to Jesus, that Jesus can make him whole again, that Jesus could take care of him. And so they determined a plan, a strategy, a caper. You see, they were going to tie ropes to his mat, and the four of them were going to carry their friend all the way to where Jesus was. They scouted out ahead to say, where is Jesus at? They figured out that he's at this house. And they're like, oh, if we can get our friend to this house, we can get him right in front of Jesus, and Jesus will take care of everything, and it'll be amazing. It'll be awesome. You see, they were determined in their friendship with their friend. They were determined to help him. They got to the house, and the house was crowded. There were so many people that heard that Jesus was there that they couldn't even get inside the house. But that didn't stop these friends. We don't know the names of these four guys. We don't even know the name of the paralyzed guy, but we do know the story. That these guys were not stopped by a crowd. They were determined to help. And so they went up instead on the roof. And the Bible, when you read it in the book of Luke of what actually happens, I actually believe that the writer was kind of nonchalant about this, because he says they couldn't get in, so they went up on the roof, they removed the roof tiles, and they lowered him in right to Jesus. Yeah, because that's what we would all do, right? No. They had to come up with plan B. And they said, we're determined to do this. We're determined to take care of our friend. We're determined to get our friend's help. And so they figured out we can go up on the roof. They figured out this roof is made out of Legos. We can pull it apart. And it probably took a little while to pull this roof apart. And if Jesus was in the room below and there's a whole crowd in there, then everybody is stopping what they're doing. And they're like, what is going on? They cleared enough of that roof to lower their friend by ropes with this mat right in front of Jesus. And if we're not careful, we miss the point. Because Jesus, it says, that he was moved by their boldness, and the boldness of their faith. Not just because they had faith, but the boldness of their faith that they would do whatever it took because they were good friends. You see, these four friends, we don't know who they are, but we know what they did. We know them by their actions. And these four friends were determined to help their friend. Here at Focus Church, we encourage you that if you just come on Sunday morning, you're missing out on a big part of what Focus Church is all about. We believe that Focus Church is a great place to worship God. It's a great place to grow and learn. It's a great place to give. It's a great place to pray. It's a great place to serve. But it's a terrible place to get to know somebody. I mean, you get to know them enough to find out what the superhero is and shake their hand and find out if they like the snow on the ground or not. And, hey, how you doing? And you just get kind of the surface level stuff. But see, the key here at this church is that you got to be a part of a life group. And we've created life groups with one sole purpose in mind, that you get to find out about another person and you get to make friends. It's about friendship. And it's not so that you can collect friends like we collect friends on Facebook. We're talking about so you can collect people in your life who are going to be determined to help you in life, just like these four friends were. And you will not get there. You will not have those kinds of friends unless you are actively making friends and you're actively getting involved. We have an example of these four friends. We don't get to know who they are, but we know them by their actions. They showed love that day. They showed what it was like to be a friend. And I'm believing that only God knows what kind of capers friends are going to do in here as part of this church, as we hear about a need and we do something to take care of it, not so that we can be advertised or so that we can announce to the pastors who can use it as a sermon illustration next time, but no, because we care about our friends and we'll be determined to help them no matter what. So that's four out of the six. Moving on to the next one. To set the scene for this one, Jesus was with his guys. They call them the disciples, 12 guys that hung out with him all the time, and he shared ministry and life with them. And he said, guys, let's go to the temple and just go sit down on the bench. Jesus wanted to go do some people watching. And he aligned himself in such a place that he could see who was giving in the wood box in the back. Now you think, whoa, this is kind of weird. I mean, would you feel weird if I was sitting back there kind of watching who puts stuff into the wood box? That'd be kind of awkward. But here was Jesus with his guys, and they're just sitting in view, just watching what's happening. And they're watching as people prominently kind of make a parade of saying, yep, got my stuff here. Anybody watching it? Yep, look, let me put it in. And they're putting in their offering. They're putting in their tithes. They're giving. And I'm not sure that Jesus wasn't commenting on those people, but we do have a story here in Luke where Jesus was looking with his disciples, and all of a sudden we hear a comment. Jesus starts kind of laughing out loud, kind of, yes, hi, that's awesome. Guys, you got to check this out. And what he's saying is that there was this lady, an older lady who didn't have much, and she was giving an offering, and no one really was noticing what she was doing, but Jesus was watching. He's like, look at that lady. She's proven with her actions. She's given more than all these people around. She's showing that she loves God. One of the disciples point out, the lady, I saw what that lady gave. She only gave like a couple pennies. And I know there were some guys who were putting down some serious coin in there, and her stuff does not match up to what they were given. And Jesus said, you don't understand. All those people who are parading and giving, doing it for show, they were giving out of their excess. They determined, I make enough money that there's some leftovers that I could give, and I'm not going to really notice it that it's missing out of my bank account. And he said, this lady who is giving, she's got barely anything. And what she is giving in proportion to what she has, she is saying something with her actions. She's telling God, God, I trust you. God, I honor you. God, I love you, and here's how you can know it. It's not just my words, it's my actions. You see, nobody really noticed that lady. But you know what? Jesus knew exactly what was going on. And she gave generously that day to show God that she loved him and that God was important in her life. She gave generously to God without any fanfare. Nobody knew what she was doing, but Jesus did. And I believe that this is probably one of the main reasons why money and church kind of goes together. You know, we kind of cringe and kind of get uncomfortable in our seats when the pastor starts talking about giving and tithes and offerings and, hey, there's a spot in the back, and it's like, oh, I don't know, and wait, what's he going to say? And you know why we kind of get uncomfortable? It's not because, I'm not going to say because you feel guilty. I'm just going to say it's because money is the one thing tied to our nature that we feel is ours. Other stuff comes and goes, but man, money is something that we feel like, I earned this. This is mine. I have control over what happens to it, except for when Uncle Sam grabs part of it. And it's tied to our nature of who we are. And God knows this. And I believe that's why God asked this of us, to say, hey, do you love me? Will you give back part of it to me? And wouldn't you know that this is probably the hardest thing in the entire Bible to comprehend, and let alone to do, is that God would ask us to give something back. Now, I could be up here as your pastor and saying, hey, if you want to, you can give, and here's how you can do it. But I would be doing you the biggest disservice I could ever do. And I would be showing you by my actions that I don't care where you stand with God. But if you know me for anything, you know that I do care about you, and I do love you, and I want God's best for you. And I believe that when we can show God with our actions that we love him, and that he's given us a way to actually do it, that we should. And I believe it unlocks God's blessings in our lives. And I tell you what, the math doesn't always make sense. Because we can look on paper and say, if we don't have that 10% that God's asking me and the pastor's challenged me with, if we don't have it, I can't really make all the math work. But here's the crazy thing about it. We're talking about a God who is infinite, who knows everything and can do anything on our behalf. And we're saying, God, I don't need your help in figuring out my own personal economics. And if we point it out like that, it kind of sounds a little silly. But if you're like me, there's a lot of us who we have a lot of trouble with our own personal economics. That we find there's a lot of month left over before paycheck is still there. And that there is times where it doesn't make sense, or we're trying to make headway on a plan and it doesn't work out. And I'll tell you what, when you honor God in this area and you give generously without fanfare, do you do it because you are saying with your actions, I love you, God. I love you. Not just your words, but your actions. Then God takes what is left. He honors your commitment. He honors that your consistency. He honors your actions, and he blesses beyond measure. And I think we would be really hard-pressed that if we were to start interviewing people in this room right now and say, do you give regularly to God as he's commanding us to do? And then ask them, the people who say, yes, I regularly do, and I only live on a lesser percentage of what I make. I think if you ask them, has God ever let you fail in this? The answer would be no. I think if we asked and said, has God taken care of you? Has God worked miracles on your behalf and blessings on your behalf as you've honored him? And I believe you'd find the answer is a resounding yes. And so we have the hero, unknown hero, widow, we don't know her name. But Jesus was excited because he said, there she is! I know what she did. And here's an opportunity to do a capeless caper. When you give and you honor God in this area, without the fanfare, without the recognition, God knows. He sees it, and he's saying, yes, they love me. You know, Valentine's Day is coming up, and I'll tell you what, personally, I really struggle with holidays like this. And not because I don't have a lovely wife that I love and adore. That's part of the given. I have a hard time showing it with my actions. See, I think about it a lot. And I think about what would make her know that I love her. How can I just blow her socks off? And I think about it, and I have conversations about it with myself, and I find that, oh, all of a sudden, it's only 3 days away, and like 3/4 of the ideas I had, I can't do now because there's only 3 days left. I'm just talking for real here. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I know that Valentine's Day is on a Wednesday, and you know where we're going to be? Right here at church. So I've got a dilemma in that regard. But how many of you know that if I just let life happen and I don't do anything, some pretty blonde lady's going to be really upset with me? Right? And why? Not because I don't love her. Not because I don't tell her I love her, but because I'm not doing anything to show her I love her. The last hero, the last one we're looking at, kind of an interesting guy. This one, the Bible actually gives us his name, but if I was to say his name, I would bet that most of us have never heard his name before. And so the reason why is because his hero action and how he shows love is something he did that he received no recognition for. You see, before Jesus died, one of his 12 disciples betrayed Jesus and led his arresters right to him and We know who this guy is, right? His name is Judas. And he's notorious for what he did at the end. And he could not live with himself at the end, so he took his own life. But the disciples believed that, hey, we've got to do something about this. Jesus had entrusted the mission of the church to 12 people. And so there needs to be another one. And so in Acts chapter 1, they're describing this and they're trying to figure out, we need a 12th disciple. There's supposed to be 12 of us, or else the stained glass pictures that are going to come in cathedrals later are not going to be right. And so they came up with the requirements of who could possibly be a 12th disciple that Jesus never picked. And they said, you know what? We need to find somebody who has been here the entire time, that they saw Jesus get baptized and they witnessed his death and resurrection and everything in between, that they fully participated in everything, they saw everything, and they could be personal witnesses to all of it. They basically did everything the disciples did. And when they came up with these requirements, they came up with two guys. The first guy, his name is Matthias. And the second guy's name is Joseph, but he had a nickname of Justice. And the Bible describes that the disciples then prayed about this decision, and they did something known as casting lots. We don't know exactly what casting lots was, but we do know it was some way of voting, kind of like drawing straws or doing secret ballot, or maybe it was rock, paper, scissors. We don't know. But they believed they were divinely guided by God to pick somebody, to fulfill this important position and this important role as one of the 12, who would fill in the placeholder in the stained glass windows. And after they had voted, after they had decided, they picked Matthias. Matthias got to be one of the 12. But today we're not focusing on Matthias, because guess what? He did his actions and he got recognized for it. He got a title and he got a role and he got a position. But if we're not careful, we miss out on Justice. Justice did everything the disciples did. He participated. He did everything. He was fully qualified to be a replacement disciple. And then when the voting took place, he wasn't picked. But do you think Justice stopped doing the things he was doing? Just because he wasn't recognized? I would say probably not. They kept on being secretly incredible and doing stuff for God, that it didn't rely on that he had a cape, that he had a title, that he was recognized within the church, that he did something. He actively participated without recognition. And I want to ask you, what would our world be like if more people were doing capeless capers? If more people were getting up the guts to do something to show love and purposely doing it in such a way that they would not receive any recognition for what they were doing? They designed it in such a way that nobody would know it was them. Would our world be a different place? Well, let's bring it closer to home. What would our church look like if our church was full of people doing capeless capers, that they were determined to help their friends in time of need, that they showed God love all the time by giving generously, and that they actively participated in all that God was doing around them and through them, and yet weren't seeking a title or a role or a position? I don't know about you, but for me, looking at this strategically, I think I'm finally getting it. Understanding that Jesus was a pretty strategic guy. and that this was the way he designed it for our church. That I don't think that he was looking ahead into the 21st century, looking at Sun Prairie and looking at Focus Church and saying, yep, this is all I want from the church, is to have a collection of people who get together once a week and they do nothing but smile and handshake and sing and clap and listen and then play armchair quarterback on Monday on the preacher's sermon. That was a joke. I hope you're not doing that. But I don't think that was a strategy. I think his strategy was really that people who followed him, who claimed him, saying Jesus is in charge of my life, that they make a decision for that, that these people would be consumed with being like Jesus and following his example and having compassion on people and loving people and doing something about it and doing it with purposely not getting recognition. Now, side note. We know that Jesus did not look for recognition. Does that mean he didn't get any recognition? No, people knew what he was doing, but he wasn't seeking it. And I think it's a heart issue of what we're actually doing it for. You know, it seems that most things with God has to do with the heart issue. Why we do something. But I think we're supposed to be a church who is constantly conspiring to do capers, shenanigans, surprises, to love people, and all with the heart of not getting recognized for it, not desiring it. In 1 John chapter 3, verse 18, it says this: let's not merely say that we love each other, but let's show it by our actions. So if I was to challenge you with anything today, it would be this: to look daily for ways to show people God's love. I ask that you intentionalize it, that you plan it, that you conspire, that you figure it out. That maybe in your group of friends and your circle, and maybe you're going out to lunch today, or maybe you're going to be in a life group this week, that you guys plan even together. Hey, you know, what can we do together? What can we do to help someone? I tell you what, it's kind of exciting to be a blessing. So I say, plan it, conspire, do a caper, but leave the cape at home. Because God knows exactly what you've done. Let's pray. God, we may not have even recognized it, but it's been in front of our faces all along, and that is that your son Jesus was modeling exactly what we're supposed to be doing all the time. That we're supposed to be caring about people, and we're supposed to be showing love by our actions, and that we're supposed to conquer this selfish nature that we have that desires recognition, but to be okay with saying, hey, God knows what I've done. And to even believe in you enough to realize that that's enough. That God knows exactly my heart and God knows exactly what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. God, I'll be the first to admit that it's a hard thing to do. And it doesn't come naturally to us. But God, I would say personally and as a representative of those in this room, I would say, God, I want it to be different. I want it to be different. I need help in conquering the selfish nature of just thinking about myself, but to think about others and to take action that when you prompt us and you give us an opportunity to show us, to show people your love, they'll be quick to do it. And God, help us to not seek recognition for it. help us to not have it as a motive to have people know, here's what I'm doing. But God, help us to walk in your footsteps with your example, to love with our actions like a superhero without a cape, to all be secretly incredible. Remind us of this each and every day. And God, because it doesn't come naturally, help us to plan, help us to be creative, help us to conspire to pull off a caper a day. We love you, God, and we thank you. And we're here today talking about God and talking about his love for us and showing God's love. And you may be here today and you would say, Pastor Ryan, I didn't know what I was getting into coming to Focus Church today. Didn't realize that you're going to talk about money and love and doing stuff. And let me tell you why we even follow this example. And it's because God loved each of us so much that he did not want all of eternity to take place without people having a choice of putting him in charge of their life. But we're born with a sinful nature. We're born being selfish. We're born with a propensity to do wrong. It's in our nature, thanks to Adam and Eve's original sin. And because we've done wrong, somebody would have to pay the price. And God said, I've got to send someone. So he sent his son, Jesus, to pay the price for every wrong thing that we have done and will do, but more importantly, to not just pay the price with his life, but to give us hope with his resurrection. That God did not leave him dead, but God brought him back to life. And because of that, we have hope, and we have an opportunity. We have a decision. Because of Jesus showing his love for us with his actions, we get to decide whether or not we want God as part of our life. You see, we spend our lives trying to figure it out on our own. But I tell you what, your nature is against you. You're always going to fail. You're never going to get it right. You're going to feel like a failure. And the reason why is you're trying to accomplish something that only God can fix. So you say, sounds pretty bleak, Pastor. What have I got to do? The Bible describes that you can change your life around. There is something that you can do. It's the only thing that you can do, because it's not by your actions, but it's because of his love and his grace. And what you've got to do is you just got to decide and accept. You got to say, God, I'm deciding to put you in charge of my life. God, I'm sorry for what I've done, taking ownership for our actions. And we're committing to saying, God, I want to live with you in charge. I want you to guide and direct me. Help me to follow in your footsteps. Help me to be like we learned today, that Jesus was one that loved with his actions without a goal of being recognized for it. So if you would say today, Pastor, that's me. I need God in charge of my life. I want to make that decision today. Everyone's still got their heads bowed and they got their eyes closed. I'd like for you to let me know so I can pray with you. And you can let me know by just slipping your hand up right now and say, Pastor, that's me. Pastor, that's me. Putting your hand up in the air right now and saying, Pastor, I need to make a decision today to put God in charge. Thank you. So we're going to pray today. We're going to pray all together. I invite you to pray, repeating after me, everyone. No one prays alone. Say, Dear God, I'm sorry. I've tried it my way, and it doesn't work. I need you. I need you in charge of my life. I believe you sent your son pay the price for me. I want to live for you, follow in your footsteps. be the main character of my life. In Jesus' name.